Blog Talk Radio.
Don't say no.
Hit me on the
Don't say no.
First you diss me, then you miss me. Wanna kiss me, you misleading. That don't add up, now my math different. You say it all so simply. Wanna tempt me, but not lift me. You mistreating, now my distant. Say no to us, 'cause baby, that's like saying no to drugs. Don't say no. Don't say no. Where was you? Nah, but for real, yeah. When did you become my boo? Nah, but for real, yeah. When did you become the crew? Nah, but for real, yeah. You came out of the blue. Can't walk a mile in my shoes. Don't tell me that you love me if you know it ain't the truth. Why you invite your friend if you know I got a crew? I cover all my lies, yeah, with a hint of truth, yeah. You know how I do, yeah. Yes you do, yeah. You know how I do, yeah. Yes you do, yeah. You know how I do, yeah. Yes you do, yeah. Don't say. Don't say no. First you diss me, then you miss me. Wanna kiss me, you misleading. That don't add up, now my math different. You say it all so simply. Wanna tempt me, but not lift me. You mistreating, now my distant. You say.
Baby Byron.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how about you?
Not too bad, brother, not too bad. I don't know if you can hear me too well. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, because where I'm at is kind of like a little echoey and a little bad reception, but it's the quietest place I can get to.
All right. Well, I'm glad to have you here on the Dr. Geo Show.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Been looking forward to speaking with you.
Thank you. I'm honored. I really appreciate it for, you know, you taking the time out to, you know, give me some time.
Yeah, I heard you got your first solo album. Drugs Before the Flight.
I think that was a unfortunate typo from my publicist. It's actually not my solo project. It's just a project that I ended up producing. I took the lead in making the songs for this particular project. It's still under a kid called God, which is a group I'm in with me and Shay Snefford.
Oh, I see. So I've been reading.
Yeah, but it's all well.
I've been reading. Your family were guests on CNN and the Montel Williams show.
Yeah, Montel Williams, CNN, Ricky Lake, LA Times did an article. You know, a couple of publications like that. You know, and a couple of broadcast stations. You know, provide that type of information at the time. This is, and by the way, for anybody that's listening, this is, you know, a topic that is of the 90s, but it's still relevant today for anybody that will be confused, you know, about the significance of me being on Montel Williams. I don't think nobody, you know, sees Montel Williams as much as now, or, you know, some of those other people from television of that time. It's like, you know, Montel Williams or Ricky Lake and stuff like that.
Yeah, pretty interesting. And also, your story has inspired a book and Hollywood movie that starred Halle Berry.
Correct. Yes. Now, you know, and I'm glad you brought that, because a lot of people need to know the difference. You know, the Baby Byron story and the Losing Isaiah story, there is a relationship, but the relationship isn't as clear as whether it's about me, and if you don't mind, I could elaborate on what I mean by that.
What I mean
is, when it comes to the Baby Byron story and the Losing Isaiah story, the Baby Byron story takes place in the 1992 to 1996, and Losing Isaiah came out in 1995, if I'm not mistaken, through a Lifetime. And now, I'm not saying Losing Isaiah takes from my life story, but what I do know to be fact is that Losing Isaiah and the producers of Losing Isaiah, whether or not they admit it or not, I feel they, you know, capitalized on what was already publicized, you know, because the Baby Byron story, or the Baby Byron case, you know, was publicized from 92 to 96. And like I said, I don't feel like they used my life particularly, but they used the momentum for people to say, oh, this must be the Baby Byron story, to flock to the film.
Oh, I see. So what have you been doing during the pandemic to keep busy?
Oh, man, I'm a father of two. You know, I have two sons. I have an oldest that's 11. Then I have my youngest who's 7 months. So, and by the way, I'm 27 for anybody trying to do the math for all this going on. I was born July 15th, 1992. 27. I turned 28 this year. But other than that, being a parent, man, I'm pretty sure, you know, over where, you know, where you are, it's kind of like the same thing. You know, the most you could do is where you're at. You know what I mean? And you know, be at home as best as I can. You know, staying safe. You know.
Yeah.
And, you know, just pretty much trying to be very careful. You know, I was just watching on Facebook a video that went viral. Yeah, I mean, I'm from Pittsburgh, by the way, for anybody that's listening. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I was watching a video that was, I think, uploaded maybe last night or the day before. And it was like a house, house party. You know, it was like a block. Actually, it was a house party turned to a whole block neighborhood party. You know what I'm saying? And I see people are celebrating. You know, some cities have gone into the yellow phase, and some you know, cities have, you know, fully opened completely. From what people have told me. So, you know, it's a great phase that I hope we're going to. But I just hope that, you know, there's no more surprises that could hurt, you know, the communities in America or abroad. You know what I mean? So hopefully it's, you know, it's said and done, and you know, we could all move forward from this pandemic.
Yeah, I'm definitely keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah, I bet.
You know,
you
could probably get a lot of inspiration through the pandemic to write songs.
You know, actually, I've had a lot of time to listen to myself, but also listen to other people for inspiration. You know, I've been listening to a lot of different artists. You know, there's an artist named Louis who I've been listening to, who's really, you know, really dope. You know, there's so many artists that's just been, you know, giving me inspiration, you know, to stay active. You know what I mean? Because it's hard when there's, because, you know, usually for artists you need imagination. You know what I mean? You need some type of substance to create your stuff. Even if you're not an actual artist, you know, some people are not a musician, but there's, you know, other forms of art that you need to have some type of, you know, canvas to work with. And right now, this pandemic has given a lot of people either writer's block, or they've given them so much, you know, imagination, like when we were kids, you know. You know, when we were younger, I feel like, you know, our imagination was endless because we weren't really barricaded with our imagination. So with now, you have no choice but to somehow find that imagination and innovativeness to kind of not only be able to create and produce art, but also just be able to maintain, because majority of everything is like an unseen, unknown thing. So you have to have your imagination be, you know, very, very productive, and at least, you know, not in a negative way, but also in a very therapeutic way. Keep your imagination going in a time like this, because this is a very dull. This could be a very dull time for some people, which I understand. Being in your house for that long, or being any type of isolation, you know what I mean? It could do something to somebody's psyche, you know what I mean, after a period of time. So I understand completely. So me understanding, it's like, you know, I just, you know, want everybody, like I said, to, you know, buckle down, keep finding inspiration, and, you know, and rely on your imagination, you know what I mean, as we continue.
I agree with you completely. I have noticed that with this going on, that a lot of people are trying to use their imagination, be creative, to keep themselves entertained, you know.
It's important. I mean, it's important. You know, I have kids. Like, you know, I guess I have a son who needs that. He needs that extra, you know what I mean? Like, because a kid getting cut off from a lot of things is like, you know, that's torture, you know what I mean? So, even for a parent, because a parent got to find, pull things out they, you know, out they rear to figure things out, like, you know what I'm saying, right now. Like, you know, we got to figure out financial things. We got to figure out a lot of things. But other than that, you know, I feel like with music and Drugs Before Flight was actually originally supposed to be released on 420 in April, but there were so many things that happened that, you know, I record that frequently. You know, I've been recording that for 3-4 years. I shut down, so it was like had to re-strategize, you know, and kind of go about it differently, just a little bit. Improvisation has played a big part in Drugs Before the Flight. It's, you know, I'll still be releasing it. It'll just be released in parts. Like, you know, I'll give like a song or two, you know, whatever as the year goes. But more than likely August to September, I'll have the project completed, and, you know, everybody can, you know, enjoy it and listen to it. But until then, you know, I have, you know, I have 5 projects already out, you know what I mean, for people to find time to, you know, listen for, you know, can enjoy your summer too, or enjoy your isolation too as well, you know what I mean? But other than that, as far as Drugs Before the Flight, yeah, it's temporarily postponed, but I'm still releasing music from it. So Days in the Wind, which is just released on YouTube, I believe, 2, maybe 3 weeks ago, and that was the first actual song from the project. And that song will soon be available on all platforms in the next week or two, but it's available on YouTube currently.
Oh, YouTube. Oh, okay. So we'll send people there to YouTube then. We'll have to get the link from you.
Yeah, you can do it. I'll gladly send you everything, and if you need my social, I'll even send that to you as well.
Oh, wow, you're just too kind.
You know, I feel like we have to be at a time like this, you know. But if anything, you know, that's what I've been staying busy. What about you? You know, how's the show, what's been keeping you preoccupied, you know, for you?
Oh, yeah. The show has been, I'm focusing more on the show, trying to perfect it. I got a new microphone. I bought a new really high-tech, nice microphone. You know, Amazon's been a big friend here, you know, finding stuff on there.
Okay.
Getting shopping a lot on Amazon, you know, looking for little stuff to improve the show, you know.
Little doohickeys.
Yeah, doohickeys, exactly, the doohickeys. I got a really cool microphone. Yeah.
Right. Okay, it's funny. I need to do some research, because some of my interviews that I've had, and, you know, I have a son that's in homeschool now, obviously, so I have to upgrade my equipment at the house.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I have to upgrade, because sometimes I look at, you know, a live feed that I'm doing on like my son's tablet, and I feel like I'm a member in Minecraft or something. Like, the graphics are terrible for like how I see myself, I guess.
Oh no.
So yes, I feel like I'm in like a Minecraft game, so I need to actually get upgrade to Apple or something. I need to do something better in my life, just so, you know, I can make better choices. But I feel like if I can see myself back clearly, you know, in perfect pixel portions, I feel like that will definitely make a good boost in my esteem, but also it'll help in the direction with how I manage everything at home, because this, you know, technology, you know, they redo it every couple months, you know, type of thing. So it's like you're always behind. You're never actually going to be ahead of, consumer level, you'll never be ahead of anybody, you know what I'm saying, with technology, too much.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Like, I'll go on YouTube and try to look up stuff, and I'm like, they already have come out with the latest thing. What I got, it's like a year or two behind already. And
right,
here I am,
exactly.
You know, here I am thinking I got something really super new, and it's already being obsolete, practically.
Yeah, they're already asking you, what is that? And not like, what is that? And like, they never heard of it. It's more like, what is that? Like, why do you have that? What is that?
Why do you have that?
Yeah, like, why do you have that? Yeah, it went from what is that to why do you have that with certain things. So, you know. I get it, you know, so staying above, you know, or staying up to date is a part of the now, you know. I don't know, do I classify as a millennial because I was born in 92?
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's fact or not, but that's what somebody told me. Somebody told me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if I'm a millennial, then that would mean that I should be more inclined with what I have, and I don't actually know jack squat about a lot of this tech stuff as much as, you know, probably somebody of my age group would. You know, I'm very simple. You know, I just push the, you know, if I can go back to flip phones, I would.
Oh, really? There you go.
Yep. If I could go back, because, you know, it's funny, you hang up on somebody, it's way more better. You feel like you did something.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when you got a phone, when it's just a phone, you just push a button on the screen. You don't really feel like you did something. When you smack that phone, that flip, that click, it's like you feel like you did something. You feel like you proved a point. So that's what I might bring back. You know what, baby Byron? I'm going to bring back flip phones. Yep, just me alone. And I'm going to make sure that everybody else is inspired to go back and go back maybe, what, like, what's that, like 15 years? I don't know, something wild like that.
Well, hey, look at even like vinyl is back. So, I mean, that could happen.
Right, and that's timeless. You know what I mean? That's a timeless, you know, thing. So, yeah, you're right. Who knows? It could be back. Wouldn't that be crazy if you look like 2 years, 3 years from now and that's a thing because of me? That'd be funny. You should, you know, make sure you never lose this interview because that would be funny. I actually want to make sure that if that ever happens, I could find this interview and I could call you and we could have an anniversary interview or something. I say, hey, I'm calling you, but I'm calling you on that flip phone.
I'm
calling you, and I'm on this flip phone like I said I would be, you know? So maybe we should speak that into existence. That's what we're working on. 2022, Baby Vine's bringing back flip phone technology.
That's going to be your year, 2022,
because I'll be 30, and, you know, that just makes sense to me. It just makes sense to me. 30. You know, 30 is when you make a lot of new decisions. I feel like, was it like 16, 21, 25, and then 30?
And
like
30.
Those years that you kind of like, they're like highlights for you as you go, I guess, you know, for certain people. So 30, I have to have some type of achievement on my resume outside of, you know, being a father of two beautiful boys, you know, and pursuing this music. You know, I always want to adventure off and to do other things, you know. So that's a plan that hopefully, even if it's not, you know, as crazy as out of the box as bringing back retro technology, just something along the lines that I'm always interested in doing is doing something uncommon, you know what I mean, or unorthodox. So even if it's not that, you will not be, you know, guaranteed I will surprise you in, like, a couple years of something I'm doing just because I'm just weird like that. Mind you, I don't even plan that far ahead. It's just sometimes things happen that way. Because
I mean, so
my personality, I've always somehow attracted craziness.
Don't you love it when something happens, it's unplanned, but it's something good? Like you go someplace and then so there's some friends there that you didn't expect would be there, and then, you know, just adds to the fun.
Facts. Yes, exactly. Best analogy I think I could put together, because, you know, that's pretty much the type of time we're in, and, you know, makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
But how's the weather where you at? What are you in? You're in Detroit?
I'm in Detroit. I'm in Detroit currently, and we've been lucky the last couple of days. It's been sunny, warm. It's probably like about 88 degrees. And we're not used to the weather normally.
Oh, yeah, Midwest? Oh, yeah, Midwest is like a chilly kind of, you know, I lived in Kansas for a little bit. I lived in Kansas for like a year.
Oh.
Yeah. And when I lived in Kansas, I don't think I ever, I was there for like a year, and during my time, I don't really remember the summer as much as I remember the winter. The winter just was so, I felt like it was harsh, like really harsh for some reason. You know what I mean? And mind you, I'm from the East Coast, so I know harsh. You know, I'm from Pittsburgh. You know what I mean, Pennsylvania. So I know what a harsh, you know, winters is. But I feel like that winter definitely. When I was in Kansas, you know, I got to learn what it meant to have a Midwest chill. You know what I mean? If that makes sense. It's real.
I know. I heard that in Philadelphia, they really love their football in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Philly? Oh, Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I thought you had said you're in Philadelphia.
No, I'm from Pittsburgh.
Oh, you're from Pittsburgh. Yeah, okay, I got them mixed up. Yeah, I know, even in Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh, they love their football, too. The Steelers.
Yeah, of course. Of course, diehard city. You know, Pittsburgh is, like, actually a very sports-oriented city, kind of. You know what I mean? It's not really you go to New York or L.A. and Atlanta and other places, like, or even Chicago, where, like, the scene could be music, and it could be a lot of different things than sports and a lot of things. But Pittsburgh is primarily and predominantly a sports city. So for artists to come out of Pittsburgh, it's a lot harder because there's no industry for that in Pittsburgh. We don't have as many venues as we have, you know, tattoo parlors. You know what I mean, and stuff like that. And bars, you know what I mean? So it's a different setup. So when you to be successful from Pittsburgh, you have to really leave it to kind of bring attention to it. That's why artists from Pittsburgh is very limited. There's only like two artists people can name, and that's like Wiz Khalifa and Mac Miller. So it's like, the reason for that is because those specific artists and other artists that are going to be successful from Pittsburgh, they had to kind of learn to travel to be able to enhance, to, you know, to spike their careers. You know what I mean? Even in a digital era, we still have to travel here because Pittsburgh, like I said, is a very, it's not as musically inclined as every other city. You know what I mean? So the struggle is a little bit harder than everywhere else.
Let's see. I was going to ask you about the title of your album. What does it mean, Drugs Before the Flight?
The album. In 2018, we had a meeting, me and Ashe from a kid called God. We had a meeting with Warner Brothers Records, Andrew Grant, who's the director over there. And we were sitting there and we were building. And throughout the whole meeting, I realized that we were talking so much mostly about business more than the music. After a while, like, I realized that I was learning more about the business, and I started to get a weird anxiety from it, like, you know what I mean, about just so much business, so much jargon, so much, you know what I mean, it was very overwhelming from an artist standpoint, you know what I mean, at first. So what ended up happening, and mind you, I'm from Pittsburgh, you know, so it's a different environment. So I'm in California my first time. It's warm. It's you know, I'm trying, and the company I have with me, they want me to enjoy California, but I can't because my mind is on this, what I just left. I left a meeting that had my mind in a thousand places. You know what I mean? I couldn't really enjoy California the way you know, my company did, or, you know, or people I went to meet out there, you know, wanted to really let me enjoy the scene. But like I said, my mind was somewhere else. But what ended up happening, mind you, I'm 27 years old, and I haven't done any drugs recreationally at no point in my life. You know,
oh, good.
No point in my life. Not as a teenager, not as a adult, even at 21. A lot of times I don't even drink for real. So I went majority of my life sober. So when I'm in California, you know, I didn't think much of, you know, I don't have no bad stigmas against it. I didn't have no, and I, plus I was never a better than you type person. It's just, I just never got into it.
Yeah.
And then when I was in California after the meeting, you know, we all partaked in a cipher, which was we all just rotated a joint, and it took my anxiety off before I had to catch my flight, because I had to also have two flights back home. So it was like a lot that I just was not enjoying the trip as much as I should have. But once I got to stop funk, my brain got to slow down, and I stopped thinking of all the, you know, things going on at once, and just planted my feet a little bit and enjoyed the sun, everything else started to work itself out. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the general concept for the project, Drugs Before the Flight. And we were thinking of changing it, because, mind you, we came up with the title in 2018. But we thought of changing it after the unfortunate demise of Juice WRLD. Because Juice WRLD died overdosing on a plane, or you know, some type of drug, you know, intake on a plane.
Oh. So,
at first, yeah, there was an artist named Juice WRLD who OD'd on a plane not like a year ago. And it was one of those situations that I didn't know if I wanted to keep the title the same, because I didn't know if somebody was going to try to tie that in on a disrespectful kind of, you know, kind of thing. So I was kind of very, you know, a little wary of it. But the more I started to listen to the project, and the more, you know, I looked at the cover art for it and all the things that we set up for it, and I felt like, you know what, instead of, you know, dismissing the whole idea, we could at least say, hey, you know, it's also in homage, you know, to an untimely demise of another artist, you know what I mean? So that's why we just kept it as Drugs Before the Flight, and, you know, we're just going to keep it the same.
Oh, I like that. I like the title. It's a very interesting title.
Oh, thank you.
It makes people
a lot of people actually do take drugs before a flight, so it's like, you know, you know. It could have its own twist.
Oh, I see, yeah. Would you want to live in California?
No.
No.
No, not really. Only because I feel like, you know, I say, for example, I'm not despite what people may think, because I do, you know, interviews and I do music, that they might think that I want that type of day-to-day lifestyle, right? Like, where it's like, you know, I feel like if you move to L.A. and Hollywood and stuff, you're doing that for your job. It's like a work type thing.
Oh, I see.
I feel like that's like a work. Cause I feel like when you're, like, say, for example, there's so many actors and artists that complain about paparazzi, right?
Well, yeah.
They purposely choose to live in environments that they know are flooded with this stuff. There's no paparazzi in the Midwest.
No.
There's no paparazzi in down south or like that. I mean, paparazzi could be anybody with a phone, technically. But I'm saying the type of Hollywood type of publications that always manage to catch somebody at a, you know, a grocery store, you know what I'm saying, or, you know, hearing mad and stuff like that, where the privacy is kind of limited. But I feel like that's the exchange of them doing their job. Like, they purposely live there. But me personally,
yeah.
I don't think I would live there. I might visit, I might work there, but as far as, like, living, probably not.
Yeah. They say also don't work where you vacation. You know, it's a nice vacation place, of course, but, you know, you wouldn't want
right.
to live some...
Wouldn't do that.
Hey, how about your song, Don't Say No? your song Don't Say No, what's the inspiration behind that one?
Don't Say No actually was a conversation between me and an ex-girlfriend, kind of, a little bit. Like, kind of. I wouldn't say completely, but it was like a, you know, when you're talking to your significant other, you know, whatever age group you're in, more than likely you have pet names for each other, or you have, you know, a secret conversation, you have a secret lingo that y'all only know half the time. So
yeah.
I feel like this relationship that I was in, you know, the girl used to always refer to herself as a drug all the time. Like, that was like her, like, you know, her, like, kind of her thing, because, you know, she knew she had me under her finger, under her trance. So that was like her thing. So she kind of helped me with the idea of the song, even if that relationship was over so many years ago. But the idea, I always thought it was just interesting, because I also heard the phrase before, you know, addictive personalities. I heard a lot of different things of that nature. So it's like it kind of correlates to all those different things, but in a playful manner, you know what I'm saying? I don't actually, you know, actually know none of my music. Do I actually suggest actually people partake in drugs? You know, to actually don't actually make, it might sound like because of my titles, but actually none of my songs actually promote drug dealing or, you know, anything of that nature. So it's always interesting, you know, when people want to know the meaning behind a title. But yeah, Don't Say No is about a personal relationship, or just a funny, intimate relationship between two people, you know, who know how to make light of a situation. And, you know, that's pretty much what Don't Say No is.
Well, here it is on Black Talk Radio. We'll play Don't Say No.
Don't say no. Don't say no. Don't say no. Kiss me, you misleading, that don't add up. Now my math different. You say it also simply wanna tempt me, but not lift me. You mistreating, now my distant. You say, baby, don't say no to us, cause baby, that's like saying no to drugs. Don't say no. Don't say no. Don't say no. First you diss me, then you miss me. Wanna kiss me, you misleading. That don't add up, now my math different. You say it also simply wanna tempt me, but not lift me. You mistreating, now my distant. You say, baby, don't say no to us, cause baby, that's like saying no to drugs. Yeah. Don't say no. Let's go. Yeah.
say, don't say no. Yeah.
Don't say no.
First you diss me, then you miss me. Wanna kiss me, you misleading. That don't add up, now my math different. You say it all so simply. Wanna tempt me, but not lift me. You mistreating, now my distant. You say, baby, don't say no to us. Cause baby, that's like saying no to drugs. Don't say no. Don't say no.
Don't say no, right here on Blog Talk Radio, the Dr. Geo Show. Love that one. I love the beat.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It actually sounds so crazy. I haven't listened to the song in like a little bit. So hearing it again, like, I actually sat through and listened. I'm, that's actually, you know, it's dope. You know what I mean? No, thank you. I appreciate it. The beat is produced by Stick D.
Oh. Yeah, I like that beat. And it sounds really, you know, what comes when you do raps, what comes first, the music or the lyrics?
They usually come at the same time. Only because I have a problem with, I don't know if it's a problem, but I guess for me it's a problem when I can't write down the rap and read it. Like, I can't read and rap. For some reason, it feels like I'm working two different parts of my brain. So when I'm in the studio, majority of the time I just kind of recite a lot of lines until they make sense, or I just rap, you know, a pre-rehearsed in my head verse, because I can't, for some reason my mind won't allow me to read it and rap it. So it's only in my head, but it's written, like I put the words in my head together. I just can't physically read them and rap them. Cause I stumble. I don't know why, but I stumble. So that's why it's weird. I don't know why I'm that way. Only in the studio. And mind you, I've done it. I've done other things in life that it never hindered me, but something about being able to read it. I think you know what it is? I think reading and rapping and then trying to be on time with the beat. Like all these different things play in my mind that is like, I feel like I just can't do it. So that's why I say, you know what? I'll just go off of what's in my head, and I'll keep rapping or repeating it until it sounds good to me. If it sounds good, it's going to look good, it's going to feel good. So that's why I take a different approach with the process.
Sweet. That's good to know. I always wondered.
Yeah, and mind you, I don't think I ever told anybody that. I'm actually on, like, an interview. I don't think, you know, people that work for me in music have been working with me and music knows this about me, but I don't think that's common knowledge for a lot of people. So that's an exclusive, just for you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, see? Well, you know, get more time to think about better questions.
Yep, exactly.
With all this extra time, you know, you put more heart into what your work, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. You know, try harder. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. We're putting that effort.
That's right. So I was going to ask you, like, who, when you were growing up, who are your favorite idols that you looked up to?
My favorite idols. That's a tough one. Because as a kid, I was easily inspired. Like, you know what I mean? I feel like, you know, I remember when I was like 8 or 9, I think I wanted to be a cop when I was 9. And then when I became like 11 or 12, I was like, that's a terrible idea. What else? You know, I've always had, but as far as like people I look up to as far as the music and things like that, I think one of, just the main, you know, I could say a rapper that made me want to actually make music, like in rap, I guess it would probably be 50 Cent.
Probably 50 Cent, oh yeah.
Probably, because I'm thinking if we're talking about like when I started rapping since I got a kid, it was 50 Cent. Like 50 Cent was the biggest rapper when I was a kid.
Oh yeah.
Now, I don't know for a lot of different people. Now, it might not seem like that because there are different age groups, and, of course, you're born. It blew my mind. Somebody born in 2000 is 20 now, so their mind on 50 Cent is like, who? Like kind of, or not who, but I kind of like, I know him, but I don't see why you like him that much or why you used to like him that much. It's just, yeah, different time periods, different eras. Then, you know, people got to think of when that person came out, who was the accompanying people of the time to kind of make it make sense. Versus now, if you're a fan, you won't be a fan of a 50 Cent in this kind of era, only because this kind of era is more so, it's more, I'm not saying it's more youthful, it's more, like 50 Cent in that time period was a little bit, they signed people based off of like a, not only a good sales history with their music and stuff like that, or what they call buzz, but also they used to try to sign people off of how authentic the persona was.
Oh.
Yeah, in the hip hop industry, not necessarily in any other form of music, but in hip hop, yeah, the signing process was kind of harsher after 50 Cent and during 50 Cent, because around that time, you had to really be somebody that was come, because, you know, hip hop is a very over exaggerated form of music a lot of the time. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's exaggeration. And it's how well can you tell your story and how best. But when 50 Cent came around, I feel like he brought in an era that had to make people feel you had to really shoot people to be a rapper. You know what I'm saying? Or you had to really be in bar fighting, like really get, you know, real, you know, activity that aligns with the music. So that era kind of birthed in this new era of different types of artists in the hip-hop community that might not subscribe to that type of activity, and then there's some that do. But I feel like, you know, when I was growing up, there was nobody exactly like 50 Cent, you know what I mean, to me, when I was a kid. Now, there's like 1,000 people like that, you know what I mean, or but they might not seem like him, but there was like 1,000 of rappers that, you know, got shot, glorified a certain thing, you know, it's like a persona that even if it is real for that person, it's thanks to and is accredited to probably 50 Cent. So that's why I said when I was a kid, that's what inspired me and stuff like that. But that was like a time period. If, you know, if I was younger than that or older than that, I probably would have had a different rapper, but it's just where the time dropped on when I was like a teenager who was the rapper of the time, and it was 50 Cent.
Yeah. Who would be the inspiration now for a lot of kids?
I was the inspiration now for a lot of kids. It's a tough one because today's kids are inspiring kids compared to then. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The typical rapper now is like 17 to 21. You know what I'm saying? On average. A lot of them are children. Or just getting off with childhood. So the people that they look up to are somebody that's kind of more relatable to them due to their age, you know, kind of range. But, you know, but there's so many artists that I could say, you know, are very influential to a lot of different age groups. But also, you know, there's artists like J. Cole. There's Kendrick Lamar. There's Drake. You know, there's a lot of inspirational artists. Drake's, I think the highest selling rapper right now. You know, there's a lot of rappers, but as far as
I think
today's, you know, but I feel like, you know, actually just in comparison to now and then, I guess back then you could only like one at a time, you know, back when we were younger. Now you could like any kind of rapper. Back then you could only have like, if you had a favorite, that was it. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you have to argue with everybody about that rapper. But that's hip hop. That's a hip hop kind of culture. It's like a competitive kind of culture. So it's like, you know, he's my favorite rapper. Who's your top five? You know, it's like very competitive type thing. So, but that was a different era versus now. It's like you could be a fan of anybody and everybody, no matter what their style is. You know, you could have a rapper like Lil Nas X who makes country rap.
Oh yeah.
I mean, So there's so many different forms of hip hop. Not saying there wasn't like a Kid Rock and these other different kinds of people, different eras, but we're saying for the age group of now, you know, like of like now, it's one person or it's like a few other people, but it's just now it's becoming more well versed, I guess. The inspirations are coming in all shapes and sizes.
It's an exciting time to be a rapper.
Yeah, it's exciting. You know, I would say it's an exciting time to be an artist. Because you know, not even necessarily in music, because I feel like what happened after the Black Plague, if anybody's familiar with history, the Renaissance.
There was a Renaissance,
Yeah, so it's the same with our music. You know what I mean? It's a brush in a new era, hopefully, after this, you know, pandemic. It's going to usher in a new vibe, a new vibration, maybe some more brotherhood. It's a different sisterhood. It might be a different type of vibration coming off of this. You know what I mean? I've seen a lot of unity, you know what I mean, back at home, back in prison. I've seen a lot of people who make more time for each other because of the circumstances. So, you know, like I said, it's something that's putting in a good spark in the mind of anybody with creative, you know, intelligence. So I feel like now is a good time. Like you said as well, it's a very good time if you have your heart in the right place and your mind in the same.
Yeah, I agree. If you have your heart in the right place, you can watch out, universe, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Heart in the right place, you know, that's real. You know, and I tell people all the time, you know, when you set a goal for yourself and, you know, and you appreciate, you know, the result, you know what I mean, versus trying to get somebody else's success and trying to appreciate what they got. But I feel like that's where a lot of people go wrong, is chasing other people's success. Yeah, I mean, you'll find yourself kind of like in a rabbit hole, you know what I mean, when you realize that it's, you know, trying to be somebody else, or not even be somebody else, but want what somebody else has and hope that it applies to you, you know, is one of the biggest disappointments I learned in my life. So that's when I know if I get somebody advice, I'll just be like, hey, do what you want to do to your fullest potential and be okay with whatever you get out of it as long as you put all you into it, versus saying, hey, Jay-Z's a billionaire.
Jay-Z.
You can make just like how Jay-Z did. I don't want to put that information out there, because I feel like that's making people aim farther than what we're, you know, even though they say you aim for the stars, land on the clouds if you miss. But the thing is, you know, I feel providing realism and taking away a lot of the illusion from a lot of things will make the approach for a lot of people more beneficial, or the result more beneficial for people that pursue music or pursue mm-hmm. anything in entertainment. It's to understand that if you do it first with your heart and passion in it, whatever you get from it, you're okay with it, because you're doing it for the love of it. Now, you're not doing it for the chase of success. And you notice everybody that actually is the most successful is because they actually love their craft that much. They're not just that good, and they're not that lucky. You know what I mean? They're not lucky. You know I mean, it's not a stroke of luck a lot of these artists get. You know, Eminem is not a lucky person. If you know his story, it's not a lucky person. That's not luck. That's hard work. You know what I mean? That is a lot of hard work. You know what I'm saying? To be the highest selling, one of the highest selling artists of all time, that doesn't come from luck. That comes from a lot of hard work. So
it didn't happen overnight.
It does not happen overnight. It does. Jay-Z, I think he said he released his first album and he was 27. And I think 50 Cent got signed to Eminem and he was like approaching 30. He had 10, 15 years before that struggling or whatever it could be to get to that point. You know what I mean? Ain't nobody's story an overnight thing. And even the people that come off as if it's overnight, it's really a long process in between the 24 hours. So that's why it's like that's like redirecting people's thinking before approaching a job or a task you know, will get the job done faster, but also the people will feel like they put something in and they left for something as well. You know what I mean? So that's why I feel like you put your heart into it, you'll always be happy with whatever results you get. And I feel like that's what you need to do.
And you know what? If you're putting your heart into something, people pick up on that.
Exactly.
You know, people can pick up on that right away.
Immediately. You know, immediately. You know what I mean? And that's not saying don't take time to learn and to study and just, you know, there's, you know, because you got to put your heart into the studying too. It's just like a lot of, it's just work. You know, that's all. You know what I mean? You know, if you really want whatever you go for, and it's not even necessarily music. It's any career goal you pick. You know what I'm saying? Like, you feel like this. It's like saying you're a doctor, right? You have to go through, like, 15 years of schooling for that. Like, it's a long time.
Yeah.
You spend your whole life to get that job. Your whole life. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, and the pay is nice, obviously, but it's a long journey to get to that, you know? So why should it be any different for anything else that you want to be very good at and get paid very well for? Why should it be easy, like, for you? Like, and it shouldn't be. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it's not easy for 99% of everybody else, it shouldn't be easy for you either. So, you know, that's just how I see it, though.
Yeah, because I've heard, you know, I work with younger people, and when I ask them about their dreams, what they want to be for the future, a lot of times they'll say they want to be, you know, rapper, or they want to be artist of some type. I'll get a few, but they don't realize just how much work it is. You know, you really got to put your heart into it, and, you know, it's not going to happen at a snap of a finger.
Yeah, and you got to get told no a lot. You got to get told
rejection,
no a lot.
Yeah, you got to deal with rejection.
Exactly. Rejection is probably the first language you learn in doing music. It's probably the first advice you get is something that is the first advice they give you is to not do it. That's the first advice they give you half the time. You know what I'm saying? And with that being said, it's like, you know, nobody wants to pursue nothing that they don't really want to believe in, but understand that music is still a business too. A lot of people want to be a rapper, but understand your name, you have to copyright that. You know what I'm saying? That's a form of legal documentation, right? You know, you have to register your material as, you know, for when people listen to it, that you can get paid for it. Because being an artist, it is a job. It is a job it is a job to a certain degree if you are able to know how to make money from it. I know people that have been making music for years and been able to make money off of their music for years because they know how to set it up to make money from it. Versus saying, I want to be a rapper just because the videos look cool and all stuff. But understand that video is expensive. That's an expense. That's like the average music video cost for an independent artist is like $2,000 to, you know, it could be a baseline of $1,000 to $2,000 for an independent artist. And that doesn't mean it'll be of the greatest quality. And it might not be the greatest of quality. So that's an investment that you have to take. So if you say, okay, I want to do this music video, okay, that's an X, Y, and Z. That's a price of this much. And then, okay, do you have plans on pursuing for people to see this video, or are you just planning on shooting it and uploading it? Because that's how there's a billion videos on YouTube, because it's easy. You can upload a video to your phone from YouTube. It's not hard. But what separates your video, you know, that's when marketing comes into play. What makes your product better? You know, how do you get attention? You know how to do ads. You know how to do advertisements. You know how to do sponsors. You know how to, you know, like, there's other ways to go about it to actually make you a legitimate business, and you can make money off your music and pay your bills. It's just you have to approach it like that. And that's not saying you make millions of dollars, but if you just say, hey, if I can make money off of my material to take care of me and my bills, whether it's my rent, whether it's this, whether it's that, you know, that's a job now. It's an occupation. It's what pays the bills. But you can't approach it that way if you're looking at it on a on a romanticized kind of level. Like where it's like, you know, it's all just like if I show up, you know, or what they say, if I build it, go come type of thing to me. You know what I mean? I can't, it's like, you know, people wouldn't know what Disney World is there if they don't know it's on a map, or if there's no advertisements there, if there's no traffic there. Like, you have to know it's there. Somebody has to tell you. You have to have seen it somewhere. Like, you have to bring somebody's attention. So, and mind you, that's all investing. That's all investing into yourself. That's, it costs. So, that's why I said it's a business nonetheless. And I feel like if you approach it that way, the chances of you being successful are higher when you approach it as a business versus approaching it as a hobby or a pastime or as a dream-like thing. But if you say, hey, I'm about to go clock in, I'm about to go talk to these venues, these local venues, I'm going to say, hey, I can do a show for $200, $300, you know, whatever, $150, blah, blah, blah. You can make it make sense. You know, you can make it make sense. You do four shows at the rate of $250, you have $1,000.
There we go.
You can do that. You can do that in 3 days. You know what I mean? Sweet. That's why I said don't set the bar too high too soon, because certain artists, they see a rapper get $50,000 a show, $75,000 a show, $100,000 a show. But understand that that person has a team of street teams, of people putting up flyers, online advertising, the management team, or this or that, all these different things that separates you from them. So you have to understand that when you're approaching it, that is a business. That's the music industry. So you have to understand it on that type of level. That's how you become successful. That's how people begin to talk to you more. That's how you get meetings. That's how you get a lot of things, is when you approach it as a business versus solely and entirely on the basis of a dream job or a dream thing. You know what I mean? I feel like that's where you will change your trajectory.
Very interesting. Yeah, I like your point of view. You know, how you're gonna make things happen. And a lot of people don't understand that, you know.
Yeah, and you know, that's okay. You know what I mean? After a while, that's just something that, you know, it's like what they say, many are called, few are chosen type of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I heard that in the Bible.
Yeah, it's a very, very common phrase. And this is something that's like, okay, you know, a lot of people have the same desires, but, you know, the core of them will give them the desire to educate themselves, will give them the desire to travel, give them the desire to meet the right people, but if it's really for you, the desire will always outlast, you know, any type of obstacle. Your desire for whatever you want is more than likely going to outlast or you know, whatever other obstacle, if it's not death. I mean, if it's not death, more than likely, you know, you will get that. You know what I mean? You will get whatever you want. You gotta really, really maintain and I was reading this book called Mastery, and it's I read it a couple years ago, but there's a book called Mastery, and it's by Robert Greene. Robert Greene, he's a really dope author, and I feel like in that book he really explained, you know, the difference between a dreamer and somebody that does something so natural. Somebody that is good at something, and then somebody that's just somebody that does something so natural, it doesn't seem real. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So you have to know the difference, you know what I mean, between a natural talent and then a developed talent that's so sharp that it has to be like, it has to be heaven sent. It has to be God sent. People said Michael Jackson's talent was a God-given talent, but they don't think he's been working at that since he was like 8 years old. A God-given talent is what you pop up with when you're like 20. That's a God-given talent. That's because it came out of nowhere. But
yeah,
you start somebody off at like 8 years old, 5 years old, doing music, they're going to be a phenomenal person if they're committed like that. So Michael Jackson is a prime example of hard work is another thing that pays off. Commitment pays off. Justin Bieber. If people want to use celebrities as examples, these are examples.
Definitely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, they got cash thrown at them and now they're this. It's like, you know, they had to work, some of them. You know?
Definitely. Well, hey, you know what? We're running out of time, but I want to thank you so much for being on the show. And love to have you back once the album is released. We can talk more about more of your experiences.
Oh, for sure. You know, I'm glad we keep you up to date. You can reach me at on Instagram, at Kid God. That's KIDGAUWD. And you can listen to my music at A Kid Called God on all platforms. And once again, that's GAUWD on all platforms.
Wonderful. I'm so happy to have you on. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, man, I appreciate you. Thank you for having me. I would like to say thank you, Dom, who's probably not even ever listening to my interviews, but thank you for arranging this. You know, I really appreciated this interview. You know, yeah, hopefully we can have another one, an anniversary interview sometime in the future.
Hey, I would love that, sure. And this will be archived here on Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, have a good day.